Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the past 60 years, presenters of the Ira Kaufman podcast. Right now, Memorial Day savings are going on. Bill Curry Ford is open long hours on Monday. You don't want to miss these offers. BillCurryFord.com is the website. Sean Sullivan, the general manager, is our good friend. He will help you personally in any way he can. BillCurryFord.com.
God bless him if he can cash in on my good name. What's the matter? They couldn't get Serena? What happened? What's the big freaking deal? When I die, I want to go to Ira Kaufman's. It looks absolutely deplorable. I got 20,000 followers, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Welcome in, everybody. Episode 2 of This Week, as we march toward the end of May and closer to training camp, featuring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the king of Pasco County, the baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, Uncle Ira, Ira Kaufman. Sage, we are so fired up. We got a great podcast today, presented as always by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. How are you, Sage?
I'm doing well, Steve. There's nobody that I'm lamenting their passing in the last couple of days. However, speaking of obituaries, as our listeners know, I've been working on a side job writing future obituaries for the Hollywood Reporter. And I've been doing it for like the last 15 months. And I've done a bunch of advanced obits, sports related. People like Mike Ditka, Jim Boughton, who ended up passing away about a month after I submitted his obit. And sure enough, there's my byline on his obit. Well, anyway, you know, they're struggling just like most ventures. And I got one more to do, which is Tim McCarver. And I don't wish Tim McCarver any harm. I just knocked off Irv Cross from CBS NFL Today. And Lee, as an old Cardinal fan, you'll remember McCarver. He was very close to Bob Gibson. He was a catcher and a darn good one. Very instrumental in St. Louis's success in the 60s, Lee.
He was a good catcher. I barely remember him playing. I remember him more as Steve Carlton's designated catcher when they were both with the Phillies. At the tail end of McCarver's career. Right now, I don't know if you are aware of this, I were included in his obit. The last 2 years, he does about 50 or 60 games as a color analyst for Fox Sports Midwest.
Well, he had a second career and a very good one as a baseball announcer. Yeah, he was good.
That's good. Harry, you should call him up, say, hey, I'm working on your obituary. Anything you want in there, buddy?
Anything you want me to mention?
Didn't you do Billy Packer and Brent Musburger as well?
I did do Billy Packer and Brent Musburger. I absolutely did. Look, it's a fascinating thing because, look.
You should call up Arians and say, look, I'm trying to get ahead of the curve. I need a few bucks.
Well, I mean, speed is of the essence. When you know, and there's always somebody dying in Hollywood. You know, some 85-year-old actress gets her final part.
Jean Mansfield.
And they had to write up Phyllis George. My buddy had to write it up the other day, but it's kind of a scramble. If you don't have it at all done, you're starting with a blank piece of paper. So, Isbits, in a couple of years, I think I might be doing yours. And, of course, the fee will be reduced when I'm doing yours, of course.
Thank you, Ira. Now, look, speaking of fee reduction, the rates at Bill Curry Ford are absolutely fantastic, but they are coming to a close, Ira. The fantastic 0% offers, they will not last forever. We've been saying that. And you know what? Some of them expire the end of this month. So you need to get your butt down to BillCurryFord.com, write in your phone, start shopping, or call Sean Sullivan, general manager, our friend who you've heard here on the podcast, or go to the dealership a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Tremendous offers right now. It's the best time to buy. Summer's coming. And you can defer payments all the way out to the end of the year. BillCurryFord.com, family service, family dealership, and personal service from our friend Sean Sullivan. All right, before we talk about something else, I got to mention this. I'm searching the internet the other day for something, and I see Ira Kaufman's name, a podcast, okay. And then I look a little closer, and you know what I find, Ira? I find out that
I'm afraid to ask, Stevie. I'm afraid.
I find that on 95.9, 106.9 FM in West Palm Beach, every Monday night is a show called Ira on Sports with Ira Kaufman. And this man who hosts the show is a real person.
Come on, come on. You're making this up. You're making this up.
I'm not making it up. He's a real person. I'm guessing he's probably late 40s, mid 40s. And he looks like your long lost, not very attractive cousin, Ira.
The same spelling on Kaufman?
Same spelling? Ira Kaufman. So I may bring him on as a guest on the podcast just for 5 minutes of laughs.
What the hell's he talk about? The Dolphins and the South Florida scene? Well, what's he talking about?
Yeah, he talks about a lot of things. I don't know. It's only a weekly show. Bottom line is the show is called Ira on Sports with Ira Kaufman.
Lee, if I ever find out that he's on the top 50 Google and I'm not, well, I got a real problem, Lee.
If I'm not thinking of Ira Kaufman, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the next Ira that comes to mind is Ira Schofel up at Tallahassee, who covered Florida State forever, and I think he was sports editor at the Tallahassee Democrat once upon a time. He still covers Florida State. That's who I always think of, and he's from South Florida too, by the way. But those are the famous Iras I know of.
Ira Burkow.
Why is that name going through my head? Ira, the famous sports writer, newscaster. What?
He was a columnist for the New York Times, and of course you got Ira Gershwin over there, Steve. There's been some Iras through history, Stephen.
Ira, this guy.
Ira Miller.
This guy's probably going out having one night stands with women in Palm Beach, and saying, "Hey, look, here's my Twitter account, iKaufman76. I'm famous, baby.
I got 20,000 followers, baby. Let's go."
All right.
You know what? God bless him, Steve. God bless him if he can cash in on my good name.
All right, Ira. Look, when this guy's show runs every Monday night, you're welcome to listen to it as you crack open a Big Storm beer from our friends at Big Storm Brewery, who, of course, made national headlines with their incredible fast development and delivery of hand sanitizer, which they're still doing. But Big Storm is all about the beer, America's best craft beer. You can dine at their fantastic tap rooms in Clearwater on 49th Street in Odessa, right off State Road 54. We're going to be announcing our dates for our watch parties there with the Sage, and just great people at Big Storm. But it is all about the beer. They always tell me it's all about the beer, and it really is. Their core beers, you can find them at BigStormBrewery.com through their Storm Tracker, which we have at JoeBucksFan.com. Your favorite, Ira, the Tropic Pressure Florida Ale. There's the Wavemaker Amber Ale, which is the original, the Bromosa, and the Key Lime Shandy, which your wife loves. And there's so many more, and there's new ones coming. BigStormBrewery.com.
Steve, if it's all about the beer, that might be true, but don't sleep on the Reuben, Steve. Don't sleep on the Reuben.
I'm going to buy you another one, Ira.
The beer is Michael Jordan, the Reuben Scottie Pippen. Just a notch below. Notch below.
You know, Tom Brady essentially farted, and it's national news all over the place. Everybody's everywhere. You know, Tom Brady threw a football in a Tampa park. It's amazing how that thing mushroomed. And for those who didn't really understand what happened, very simply stated, we already knew that Brady was out doing some things with the guys, but he was finally spotted by the Tampa Bay Times. And they got some pictures, wrote up a little story of what they saw over a fence. And there we go. So it's all over. It's big news in Boston. It's big news on ESPN. It's everywhere. NFL Network. This is the new normal, Ira.
We've been talking about this since March 20th, guys. It's the Brady effect. It's the Brady effect. And the way I characterize it, Lee, it's very simple. The casual fan is now interested in the Tampa Bay Bucks. Not just, you know, the 18,000 diehards that have been with these guys since 1976. This is a whole new sector of fans that are interested in this franchise. And it is remarkable, as Steve points out, when the schedule came out, you know, the Bucks were the number one team to be analyzed. Not the Chiefs, not the Cowboys. Your little Tampa Bay Bucks, a franchise that has been irrelevant for 12 years. It is remarkable. The after effects, the repercussions of this Brady signing. It's not Gronkowski. It's Brady. Let's not fool anybody. It's Brady. Gronkowski's like, one extra layer on the wedding cake. But he's the only guy in this league and one of the few guys in sports, maybe LeBron James is comparable, that transcends the sport. And I've said it before, and I'm sure you guys would agree, If Philip Rivers had signed with the Bucks as a free agent instead of Tom Brady, they would have got one primetime game because they had to, and nobody would still be paying this pay any mind to this team. So from so many business facets, this has been a home run. He hasn't thrown his first pass other than at Berkeley Prep. And Lee, speaking of the Berkeley Prep situation, I would have put my money, and so would you, on Kevin O'Donnell. Kevin O'Donnell's very good at finding these things out, getting his guy Jeff out there with the camera, and then even doing an interview. You know, when Winston used to get his guys out there, he'd always, you know, O'Donnell would track them down. So my money would have been on O'Donnell to this one, Lee.
Yeah, that's right up his alley. You're right. Now, you're talking about how the new age of the Bucks, that they're actually relevant. And this will give you an idea, Ira, and we kind of talked about this before. But Sean Sullivan, of course, our friend, did Bill Curry Ford. He's the general manager there. He swears that he was watching the BBC, and they had a report on Brady working out. And the angle was that it was the NFL, it was okay with the NFL. They were practicing social distancing, and everything was kosher. But the BBC, Ira, we're talking international, British Broadcasting Company.
And the reason they did it is not because the Glazers own Manchester United. I don't think that was a factor. It was absolutely a separate consideration.
It was Brady. He's an international star.
Sage, here's a few things to know about what happened with Brady and how this came about that they found him. And, you know, a lot of our listeners aren't aware. A lot of them are out of town. So Berkeley Prep is a large private school on the west side of Tampa. Kindergarten all the way up through 12th grade. Very wealthy clientele. Todd Bowles' kids both go there. Greg Schiano's kids have gone there. Dirk Cutter, a lot of Bucks hierarchy's kids through the years, and all kinds of people of note have had their children go there through the years. But the point
Vince DiMoli, Fred McGriff.
Sure. And the point is that at Berkeley Prep, there is security there. And there's a security gate. There's only one way in, one way out. Kevin O'Donnell wasn't going to get in there unless he found some sort of wacky route. He wasn't going to be able to drive there and hang out by the field. Field's not even really very visible from the areas around it because it's cut off intentionally, you know, with fencing and all this stuff. Anyway, the Times got a tip that Brady was there and was working out there early in the morning. So they found a spot on a side street where they could, get a perch and see a little bit and get enough to get some pictures. So they had Rick Stroud out there, but they also had Joey Knight, who used to work at the Tribune and with you. And somebody was manning, I don't know who was doing what, but somebody was manning the front gate, which is nowhere near the backfield, to sort of see what was coming in. They had all the 3 points covered, if you will, and they got some pictures. Now, it's funny because Stroud was on local radio, and he was not happy about he called the narrative out there. He was very upset. The narrative out there that, oh, they were hiding in the bushes and they're the paparazzi and what are you doing? And he strongly implied, this is the only reason I brought it up here today, strongly implied that the Buccaneers, the people at One Buck, were not happy about what Stroud did. And I got to defend him on some level here because it's news. You can't be annoyed by somebody finding out where these guys are working out and shooting a few pictures.
Guys, the only reason the Bucks should be peeved at the Times is if the league was frowning on this behavior by Brady, and they're not. Lee, this is not a peep from Park Avenue. So in the absence of that, from a Buck perspective, all it is piquing people's interest. There's nothing wrong with it. It sounds like, you know, when Steve was describing the scene, Lee, it was almost like that movie JFK, triangulated fire, you know, around the killing of a president. I mean, all points are covered. The only thing missing was, the grassy knoll. Look, the first thing that Steve said was the most important thing. What's the big freaking deal? All right, he's throwing a couple of balls to Mike Evans. It's amazing. First of all, what the lack of sports news in general. You know, I'm tired of watching replays of the 1989 Stanley Cup on the NHL Network. I'm not going to watch it anymore. The MLB keeps showing the 77 World Series. How many times can I watch Reggie Jackson hit 3 home runs, gentlemen. You can only watch it once. There's a dearth of news out there. So all of a sudden, you know, this Brady news, you know, takes on biblical proportions, Lee. What is the big deal? He didn't do anything wrong. The league has nothing to say about it. And if he wants to get to know his new teammates and do it, you know, from a place other than one book place, I say go for it.
Well, first off, it's Brady. Brady is news. Brady sneezes, it's news. Brady, whatever he does, Brady gets thrown out of a park, it's news. He wanders into someone's, a perfect stranger's house without using a doorbell. It's news. Whatever Brady does is news. That's number one. Number two, when's the last time you saw anybody working out? Any concerted effort with players working out? I don't recall anything. This would be the first time, so there's that. As far as what Stroud, you know, obviously I didn't hear Stroud on local radio. I'm just going by how Steve described it. Maybe I've got a weird definition of paparazzi, but if you're trying to cloak and dagger something, and they certainly didn't go through the front door from what you're telling me, Steve. If they were trying to be inconspicuous, that's paparazzi. Now, having said that, they were absolutely, totally, fully in the right. If they're shooting from a street or a sidewalk, which is public property, and they could get it, you know, they could get with their camera in focus the shots, they were absolutely, perfectly, 100% in the right, sure. And the Bucks are way off base from complaining. If that needed to be so damn private, they should have gone to the fruit dome. Best of my knowledge, no one's using a fruit dome. They could have driven up to Ocala and thrown passes around with the horses or something. They got to dodge a few things here or there, but still, if it's that bad, or they could have got Lewis Murphy on the phone. Lewis Murphy has connections with Lakewood. If you want to take what Stroud was talking about literally, I was doing the same thing with Joe Paterno one time. I was hounding him for a story. Penn State was in town to do a for an Outback Bowl. They were practicing at Lakewood, so I was walking all the way around the Lakewood facility. I was trying to get hold of their SID. You couldn't see one player on the field, no matter where you were. Street, highway, parking lot, sidewalk, you name it. You could not see any player on. So that's got a lot more privacy than Brooklyn Prep, believe it or not. Lewis Murphy, one phone call, boom, they could have got in there. So,
you know what?
And by the way, Chris Urso, the photographer Chris Urso, I've known Chris ever since he was with the Tribune. Excellent photographer.
Great guy.
The images themselves, you know, he had tree limbs in them. He had car bumpers in them. It was clearly paparazzi light because it looked like someone trying to get a picture of Rihanna in her backyard or something.
You know, Steve, to be fair, as far as St. Pete Lakewood's concerned, if anybody would see DeKemper lurking around the outskirts, 911 would follow immediately. There's no question about that.
No, I didn't get a hold of Joe Paterno. I got stiff-armed by the SID. He was cooperative, but he basically said, I'll make sure he knows you're here.
What's Steve, what's the suggestion going around that this is far from the first time that Brady's been doing this? Do we know that for a fact?
Well, a couple of things, Sage. First, now we know you have Rihanna photos from her backyard, but we'll talk about that on the next podcast.
My drone did a beautiful job. Beautiful.
Why didn't they use a drone? If you're using a drone from the street, there's not a damn thing they can do about it. That's public property.
A drone? The Tampa Bay Times is lucky if they have enough money for a phone, let alone a drone. Now, Sage, here's the thing. Again, I just want to emphasize that was Stroud's implication on the radio that the Bucks weren't too happy about it. And so, again, implied, not said, flat out. Regardless, I got to say this, Ira, and you know, you've said so many times, and you sort of said it early in this podcast, that this has been such a boon for the Bucks and, you know, business-wise, and it has been. But again, I said it before, how are they going to take advantage of this? And to me, they've still failed. They're failing on many fronts and taking advantage of the Brady thing. I'll give you one small example. We know that Tom Brady would be just fine with putting on some Bucks gear in his driveway and having an independent photographer shoot him in some pictures on his driveway, you know, 6-8 feet away from him, no big deal, and send those pictures over to the Bucks, and they can use them on the website or on social media. There's no directive that says Tom Brady can't send the team pictures in his new gear, but on Buccaneers.com, they're still freaking using Brady and Patriots gear in all these pictures. And it's like, who works over there? These people need to be slapped in the head and say, what are you doing? Every time somebody sees Brady in Buccaneers gear that makes him want to buy tickets. It makes him want to scream. It makes him want to get a shirt. It makes him want to be a fan. And I don't get it, Iron.
There's a marketing job at One Buck Place with your name on it. Isvitz, I'll vouch for you. You got creative ideas. Look, I didn't know where you were going with in terms of they're not taking advantage, because certainly you're not implying, Steve, that they're not under wraps to some degree because of this pandemic. I mean, nobody could have predicted anything like that. So, of course, that has a dampening effect on marketing efforts to a certain extent. And as we sit here in late May, gentlemen, we don't know if there's going to be fans in the seats for when Carolina comes in week two. We have no
That's
idea.
True.
Hey, by the way, going back to this Ira Kaufman working out of West Palm with 150 with 150 watt station, not 150,000, 150 watts. Speaking of the name Ira Kaufman, which I'm proud of, gentlemen, the long lineage of the Kaufman family from Brooklyn, there is another very notable Ira Kaufman, and he's up in Southfield, Michigan. And I remember when I first became aware of this about 20 years ago when I covered the Tampa Bay Lightning for 2 years. And
the funeral guy?
It's the Ira Kaufman funeral home. And the word in the upper Midwest is, when I die, I want to go to Ira Kaufman's. That's the phrase. And I wasn't aware of it. And at the time that I was covering the Lightning, Bill Davidson had just bought the team, billionaire out of Detroit, and owned the Pistons, where they played in Auburn Hills, and bought the Lightning. And as a result, some of his top executives from the company came down to Tampa to run the hockey franchise. And as soon as they saw me and saw that, you know, I'm probably going to be covering this team for the Tampa Tribune, they all told me about this funeral home. The same spelling. I couldn't believe it. I never heard of the guy. It's a thriving business up in the Detroit area. Ira Kaufman Funeral Homes. Boy, it gives me a chill just to say it, Lee. Just a chill.
Ira, you talk an awful lot about death on this podcast. It's amazing. All right. I wanted to note, because you mentioned the games this year, you know, of course, everybody's always talking about it. Baltimore, the mayor, today announced that all large public events in Baltimore are canceled through August 31st. Now, that includes preseason games with fans, and the cancellation applied to any event with more than 250 people that requires a city permit. Obviously, they could have preseason games with no fans, but it makes sense that those games are no way going to be played with fans in August in Baltimore. So it's starting, and we'll see where it goes.
I was on a radio station today, guys, from D.C., the Sports Junkies, up in D.C. One guy said, you know, Ira, it's not feasible that they're going to play the NFL football games with no fans in the stands. And I said, of course it's feasible. It's absolutely feasible. And we've talked about it, but it's worth saying one more time. If any of the big four sports leagues can best afford to overcome, you know, the lack of fans in the stands, it's the National Football League. And we all know where most of the money comes from. And whether fans are in the stands or not, the TV ratings are going to be through the roof, gentlemen. So our listeners should not think for one moment that it's a guarantee that Raymond James Stadium is going to be packed at least when the games begin in September.
Now, Sports Junkies, I've heard them two or three times maybe. Unsettling to listen to them because it's like five guys. And you don't know which one's talking. It's like
It is.
It's
like
really
four
weird,
guys.
Man.
Yeah, it was four guys.
I know the Redskins guys. Those guys should know that the Redskins have had a major drop in ticket sales in the last few years. You know, they're so fed up with Daniel Snyder. They've had a major drop in ticket sales. You didn't hear Snyder say peep. Well, he didn't say anything anyway, but there were no signs or any hints that the Redskins are running in the red all of a sudden because they weren't selling tickets. So
Those
guys came up with that, I'm not sure.
You know, speaking of the Redskins, Steve, that could be the most disheveled franchise in the NFL, if not in professional sports. I mean, their stadium stinks. You know, it's not 80 years old, but it stinks. And the owner is horrible. Now, they just fired Bruce Allen, so that's a step in the right direction. But That franchise has been going nowhere, absolutely nowhere. So every time, you know, we get down on the Tampa Bay Bucks, and rightfully so, Steve, because overall, they have the worst record in NFL history. Right now, their future looks a heck of a lot brighter than the Redskins. And by the way, Steve, there's only one team that had a worse home record than your Tampa Bay Bucks in 2019, and that is the Washington Redskins. They went 1-7 at home. Oof. And I still can't believe, guys, I you know, there's so many stats about the Bucks that are beyond belief. But, Steve, you probably checked it because you're a good editor and that's what you do. But, Steve, how can you go 11 years in a row without a winning record at home?
Den of depression, baby. Den of depression. That's why we've said it over and over again.
It's absolutely crazy, Steve.
It is crazy. And your column, which highlighted how tough the home schedule is this year, and then you combine it with how difficult the Bucks have had playing successfully at home. It's interesting. Those Jameis Winston numbers you pulled up with him, with his home performance, I think if most people read that last fall, they would have said, of course you can't bring the guy back. He's horrendous at home, period.
Absolutely. And you wonder why, Lee, and you know, you think about Jameis Winston a lot. You talked about him a lot. You've written about him a lot. And I'm not trying to read your mind, but I think, Lee, in terms of his difficulties at Ray J, you're of the opinion he's trying too hard in front of the home fans. And I think there was something to be said for that. You know, those crazy throws with, you know, the guy's not open and there's no window. Most of those came at home. And Steve, one point I didn't make, I talked about his career numbers. Last year in particular, I mean, that's crazy. 24 of 30 picks at home. Now, of course, that includes the London game. It does. Only 6 picks on the road in 8 road games. I'll take that all day.
Oh, my gosh. If he had that kind of average at home, he may still be here. And as you pointed out before, Ira, very adroitly, after that Detroit game, the third last game of the year, he was returning.
He was returning.
He fell flat on his face at home 2 games in a row, and that was that.
Sage, Rob Gronkowski was on CBS HQ, CBS Sports.com today, and he was primarily talking about his new TV show that he's going to be on. It's called Game On. It's a athletic competition show. He already filmed it all, so nobody has to worry about that. But he talked about how he got in great shape for that, doing different events and, you know, almost like a weird superstars kind of thing. But he also said in the offseason to train, he's been chasing dogs and running down frisbees. And he also said, I can't believe Tom Brady's out there in Tampa running without me and throwing balls. I got to stop catching frisbees and get down there with him. So, you know, Gronkowski is going to be on national TV on CBS on this new show next week.
By the way, gentlemen, I believe I saw a promo for that show. It looks absolutely deplorable, absolutely horrible. And I don't care what the hell the ratings are. The only thing it's missing is Howie Mandel. I mean, the thing is awful. Venus Williams might be on there, I think. What's the matter? They couldn't get Serena? What happened? People put in horrible situations, trying to, you know, run through a flaming circle and getting things thrown at them. I mean, you know what? The ratings will probably be through the roof. Look, here's my hope for Gronkowski. If he's a semblance, and I mean 90% of his prime form in New England. I dare say Buck fans haven't seen anything like this since that 3 or 5 year period when Jimmy Giles was running downfield catching 70-yard passes. I mean, the tight end position has not been kind to the Tampa Bay Bucks, and I'm talking about you, Kellen Winslow Jr. Yes, I am. And
Sage.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to defend Kellen Winslow Jr., Stephen?
Winslow, we know his attitude toward his teammates and his extracurricular activities and the Vaseline and all that stuff. But Ira, the guy didn't miss a game in 3 years. He caught like 70 balls a year. He was getting double teamed a lot because they didn't have a lot of outside threat. If Rob Gronkowski turned in what Kellen Winslow did in his first year here, everybody would be happy.
Lee, am I hearing his bits right? He's putting Winslow Jr. and Gronkowski in the same sentence, Lee?
Well, I mean, I got to be fair. You know, Steve's not off base here. As sorted as Kellen Winslow is away from a football field, he put up a really good number. He produced. Now, he brought baggage like you wouldn't believe. People talk about Jameis' baggage. This guy's baggage, woo! But he produced, and you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, Ira, but there's been stories that have come out since about his time with the Bucks. And let's just say a solo activity he used to do on the team flight. This guy was mentally messed up. He was mentally.
Isn't he in trouble again? I think he's in trouble.
Behind bars. He's behind bars, Ira. Yeah, he's got a proclivity for senior citizen women, and this I'll just leave it at that. He's a bad dude.
This is the guy that Isbitz is holding up as a role model.
No, that's not what I did. We're just talking production. And look, Gronkowski is used to playing next to felons. So, I mean, it all fits.
Well, Gronkowski's going to Canton, and this guy's behind bars. So let's leave it at that.
But I'm glad you brought that up, Ira, because let me tell you something. The Buccaneers' tight ends, who aren't named Gronkowski, are constantly reveled about and revered and all this stuff. And I'm going to throw two things out at you. Last year, 19 tight ends in the NFL had 39 or more catches. Not one of them played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And those two tight ends on the Bucs, Brayton Howard, they don't block, and they're not in top 20 in receiving. Now, OJ's never had more than 34 catches in a season. Cameron Brate was special in 26 and 2017, but the last 2 years he's been injured, ineffective, and now he's a banged up, you know, recovering, but banged up 29-year-old veteran. Do you think these guys are overrated?
Well, Howard's a classic underachiever, guys. And I was talking to Lee before the podcast, and he reminded me that he brought up this point about Howard. I think it's very intriguing, Steve. We can't push this under the rug. On the virtue of his physique, his play at Alabama, the guy should not have been on the board at 19. He should not. But there he was. I dare say a lot of people thought he was top 10 material. A lot of scouts going into that draft when they were analyzing the prospects. And yet there he is at 19. And of course, you and I knew that Dirk Koetter was enthralled with this guy. And I don't know if he talked light into it or light agreed with him. But why was he there at 19? He had a spectacular, I believe his final game was spectacular at Alabama. Some bowl game. He went crazy. 200 yards.
Against Clemson.
Yeah, it was
absolutely called the national championship, Ira, not some bowl game.
I'm still thinking about Kellen Winslow Jr., but there he was at 19. So is there a pattern? I mean, I don't want to turn this into the dump on O.J. Howard thing, but I know for a fact that Jimmy Giles, who's the best tight end in Buck history by a country mile, and in the Ring of Honor for a reason. And didn't have a quarterback worth a damn after Doug Williams was discarded. He had nobody throwing to him, Jack Thompson. And yet Jimmy Giles wants to help O.J. Howard. I've mentioned it directly.
Yeah, we've talked about it. We've talked about it, Sage.
You wonder how driven Howard is. And if, look, we're not even having this discussion about, you know, Buck tight ends and their age and their production. If O.J. Howard is acting like the 19th pick in the draft. We're not even talking about it.
Phil Sims, Ira, do you consider him a straight shooter?
Yes.
So he's not a fluff guy, right?
And I covered Phil Sims' rookie season. It was my rookie year on the New York Giants, gentlemen.
1979 it was. But no, I'm leading to something here, Ira. Do you trust Phil Sims? He's a straight shooter and you respect his analysis?
Most of the time, I think he's on point.
All right. Well, two things that Sims said. I want to hear what you guys have to say on this. One, Sims was very candid with your boy, Chris Mad Dog Russo, and said, look, O.J. Howard He's the rare tight end who gets drafted in the first round, and he's not even a top 10 NFL tight end by any stretch of the imagination. So he's a huge underwhelmer and basically a bust at this point. The second point that he made is that, and this is just for me poking back at you because you were very upset in the last podcast that I said Tom Brady had a great season last year. Sims was adamant. He said, look, I've studied his movement, his arm. I don't see any drop off at all. I think his arm is still top flight. And the only thing he worries about with Brady is the willingness to take a hit. And, you know, cause that's the first thing to go, just not wanting to get hit anymore. He says Brady's at the very, very top of his game.
Steve, I was talking to somebody last night that I have a lot of respect for, that covers the Patriots, has done so for a long time. And I asked him if he thought Brady's arm strength has diminished. And he said, quote, not one bit. I was a little surprised. I watched a half dozen Patriot games last year, and I won one in particular. They played the Chiefs late in the season in Foxborough. Chiefs winning by maybe four, final minute, and Brady's at the 10-yard line of the Chiefs. Normally, that's a book 'em. Patriots are going to win that game, another comeback for the Brady bunch. And I think it became fourth down, and I still remember the play. And a guy was running from the middle into the left corner, and he had a step on the Chiefs defender, and Brady floated the ball, and it was knocked down. And I said to myself, because I like to talk to myself, gentlemen, I don't get any pushback unless, you know, unlike when I talk to Izbits, I get no argument when I talk to myself. And I said, to myself, that does not look like Tom Brady in 2012. And yet the guy that covers him on a weekly basis, saw every game, thought that Brady's arm is as strong as ever. And I'm going to go with that. You know, it's interesting what you said, Steve, about Sims talking about taking a hit. But I think the saving grace, Lee, is getting the ball out quickly. He's one of the best we've ever seen in that regard. But I will say this. The fact that he gets the ball out so quickly is a little bit, you know, has a little trepidation about taking a hit. That leads me to one honest, inescapable conclusion, gentlemen, that this downfield, risk it, biscuit, whatever you want to call it, with Arians and transferred to Leftwich, that's got to change, guys. That's got to change. It's going to be passes to backs. It's going to be checkdowns. It's going to be throws to Cameron Brate. 11 yards down the field. Otherwise, these slow developing plays, he's going to get hit, Lee. He's going to get hit.
Yeah. When Steve mentioned, you know, old quarterbacks, first thing to go is they don't get hit. He's quoting Phil Simms. That subject, I'm always reminded of a specific play, a specific image, is when Joe Namath, it might have been his last year with the Jets, he was beat to a pulp. I think what he had 2 years with the Rams, and that was it. When he, I can't remember if he got cut or he got traded, but it was, I think it was his last year with the Jets. And like I said, he who knows how many knee surgeries he had at the time. He was beaten to a pulp. And the Jets are playing the Giants at the Yale Bowl. That's when Giants Stadium was being built. They used to play Yankee Stadium. The lease had run out. The Yankees didn't want them there. Or maybe Yankee Stadium was being rebuilt at the same time. I can't remember which. But they were playing at the Yale Bowl. Giants had, that season, or for maybe two seasons, they had games at the Yale Bowl. And it was the Jets had the ball inside the five-yard line. I can't remember how the play developed, but Namath ran the ball in, ran to the right side, which was very rare for him, especially at that point in his career when he could barely walk, much less run. But as he was crossing the goal line, he held up his left hand with his fingers outstretched, the palm to the linebacker, like you would if you're going to stiff-arm somebody. Only there was nobody near him, and he held up the palm of his hand like to say, please don't hit me. I'll never forget that image. There wasn't anybody within three steps of him, and he holds his left hand up, his palm, fingers outstretched, as if to say, please don't hit me.
It's like Ira at the Bucks media buffet. More potato salad. More potato salad.
You know, now, Steve, to be fair, I mean, Namath had a history of battered knees. He had no knees left. Brady's healthy. As healthy as a 43-year-old can be. Steve, I want to make one more point. I don't think we've ever talked about this, and I think it's worth mentioning. Brady has good pocket presence, of course. He's an all-timer. But he is zero, and I mean zero, threat to scramble. Zero threat to run downfield. Zero threat on third and eight to run for a first down. He doesn't do it. And Winston wasn't bad at it. You know, I thought Winston's mobility was a real question coming out of Tallahassee. But I think Buck fans were pleasantly surprised in that regard. He's not fast, but he's got a little quickness to him in the pocket, and that's going to be missing from Brady when the protection breaks down. He's going to get sacked. Now, Winston took a lot of sacks, Steve. I understand that, but Winston also ran for 250 yards last year, and Brady's never run for more than 110. In 20 years. So let's not forget that. That's going to be a little bit of a missing factor.
Here's one for you, Ira. Talking about protection for Brady, Ryan Jensen was on Danny Woodhead's podcast recently. I didn't even know Danny Woodhead had a podcast. One of our readers in the comments like, hey, Joe, I'm surprised you don't have anything from Ryan Jensen on Danny Woodhead's podcast.
Like, well, I think he combines with Ira Kaufman in South Florida. They got a joint podcast over there. There you go.
Well, I told the guy, so this is the first I've heard of this. Thanks. And so I listened to it last night. And the first half of it was as dreadful of chatter as you can imagine. It was like two guys I'm not making this up. It was two guys trading notes on how to deal with diapers, how to deal with full diapers.
Oh, my.
How to deal with full liquid diapers, and what happens when kids are wearing boxers and they forget to go to the bathroom in the bathroom. Yeah,
we have not reached that point yet, Nisbets. We have not reached that.
We just did.
It was absolutely dreadful to listen to, but this is what Steve and I do to come up with Bucks news. We'll plow through anything. And the second half of the podcast was dynamite. It was like nonstop football stuff. And one of the things Ryan Jensen, Danny Woodhead said this to Jensen, they were talking about Brady. Ira, I don't know if you read this or not, but Tom Brady talks to Ryan Jensen in bed. I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
I don't think I need to hear any more than that.
Don't worry. Jensen made sure everybody knew he was not topless and his chest hairs were not showing. Anyway, what he said about Brady was, you know, Danny Woodhead said something about, and this is the narrative coming out of Boston, and this is a pet peeve of Steve's. This is the narrative coming out of Boston. Brady's going to go down to Tampa Bay and whip these guys into shape. He's dedicated. He works hard. Blah, blah, blah. And so Danny Woodhead started giving that line to Ryan Jensen. Yeah, he's going to make you guys block harder. And Ryan Jensen said, well, it's not just that. He goes, he's going to have different reads of Jameis. He's going to do this better than Jameis. He's going to have his releases so much quicker. So he's going to make it easier for us because he does things different than Jameis does.
That sounds good, Steve, until Cameron Jordan, tramples Tristan Wirfs on the third play of the game in the opener.
Well, speaking of that, Ira, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's interesting. Also, I wanted to add to what Lee said there. You know, Ryan Jensen did that podcast, and he kind of followed up on Twitter the other day, and he talked about how, you know, Tom Brady's very specific with the towels in the center's ass, that he likes the towel folded a certain way, and doused in baby powder, and you got to shove it all the way in your ass because he doesn't want ball sweat on the football. And this, I'm being serious here. And Jensen went into this and that he's been learning that from Brady, and he was a little uncomfortable, you know, because when he first talked to Brady, he was laying in bed and it just was a strange conversation.
You know, it's going to be different, guys. I mean, Winston has his attributes and, you know, they were substantial. You don't throw for 5,000 yards, you know, and forget about it. It doesn't happen very often. But Brady's a different kind of cat, guys. And I think the biggest difference that Buck fans are going to find is his complete mastery of the progressions and where he wants to go with the ball and where all of his targets are quickly, at warp speed. You've heard this Operation Warp Speed that America's in right now. Well, you're going to see it at Raymond James. And that ball comes out in a flash. And that's going to be a big benefit for the guys up front. who quite frankly have been rather ordinary in pass protection. And I'll say it again, below average in opening up running lanes, below average. They got to do a lot better.
Well, Ira, you mentioned Cameron Jordan, and that's really my last point. And before I bring that up, I want to remind everybody, Bill Curry Ford is the place to go. A mile north of Raymond James Stadium, BillCurryFord.com. 0% financing offers on 2020 vehicles, and 84 months, 0% financing offers on 2019 vehicles. Now, Ira drives the 2020 fancy cherry red Ford Escape. That's fine. But if you want a 2019 and you want an amazing deal and you want to not make a payment for a while on top of that, now is the time. Ira, Phil Simms also said that Brady has been probably number one in the NFL over the last 4 or 5 years in throwing screen passes. And if he's not number one, he's two or three. And here we are talking opening day, ferocious Saints pass rush. Perfect time for the Bucs to start throwing and executing your favorite play in football, the screen pass that you scream for every year since Charles Sims did it well in 2015. And now comes opening day, and they're probably not going to rely on a rookie. They know Ronald Jones, who's done well with the screens, is not their guy catching balls. There's Dare Ogunbowale set up to be the hero of Buccaneers fandom, Ira, catching 10 balls on opening day and going for 90 yards and a touchdown. What do you think about the screens?
Let's not compare this guy to Terry Metcalf over here, gentlemen. Now, the reason I'm obsessed with the screen pass, and Lee's heard me, you know, rail about this for years, and Cutter was very good at it that 2015 year that he was Lovey's offensive coordinator, and the Bucs were very effective with my man, Charles Sims, and Sims was good at it. But, Lee, a well-executed screen pass is an absolute killer for a defense.
Sure.
It makes them think twice about, you know, going full tilt towards the quarterback, pinning their ears back, and you hear all these expressions, and it drives these linebackers crazy and these defensive linemen. They don't know what the hell to do if they get burned from a back that can make something happen when they catch that ball in rhythm. And, Steve, that's the whole point of what you just said. I'm not and that's a play that takes a tremendous amount of coordination. It's not a little five-yard out pass. The offensive line, Lee, has to be absolutely in sync with the back, and the back has to be in the right spot, and the quarterback has to suck in the defensive lineman, and at the last minute, he flips that little pass to the running back. Lee, that takes a lot of coordination, and Brady's never seen these guys before. He can't even spell Obama, whatever his name is. If you ask him to spell it, he start with the O and he'd be stumped. And and it reminds me of one thing, guys. And I'm going to say it again, and I'm adamant about it. The Chiefs took the Bucks back. They took them. And I could just see Sean Sullivan nodding his head in approval because Edwards-Helaire is the screen meister. And the Bucks are going to see him at Ray J. when the Chiefs roll into town, and he's going to drive them crazy because their whole game plan is to stop Mahomes from throwing deep balls to the fastest man in football or 20 yards to Kelsey over the middle. And this Edwards-Helaire is going to, you know, kill him on third and seven. And the Bucs don't have anybody right now on the roster that I see that can execute that play, Steve. I wish they did. I hope I'm wrong. But I want to see the screen back in the Bucs' arsenal in a big way, and I think so does the quarterback, but it's not going to happen if it's not effective. Let's see if they can overcome the shortened offseason. I think that could be a factor here.
I've always been a fan of this guy, and I never could believe he was a fourth-round pick. I never could have believed he would have been picked after Mr. Sims, your buddy Charles Sims. But this Devontae Freeman,
yeah,
he's only had three bad years. One, he was injured, and the other two, he played for Dirk Cutter, who was, we know, is not known for running backs. And, of course, you know, Atlanta waved bye-bye to him, and he was still out there, and he's still out there, to the best of my knowledge. And okay, there's 31 other teams in the Bucs, so maybe this guy's damaged goods or something. I don't know. Well, and I got to be fair. I don't know if this is an agent tipping off one of his favorite reporters to try to drum up some interest in the guy. But allegedly, Seattle is interested in signing Freeman. And the first thing that goes through my mind is, Seattle knows what they're doing. They've been winning for how long? Year after year after year. They're always pulling guys off the street, even past stars. They squeeze some juice out of the old lemon, and they win. And I'm thinking, why can't the, if this is true about Seattle sniffing around Freeman, oh, that number one, that tells me, if that's true, that Freeman does have some gas left in that tank. And number two, why won't the Bucks bring this guy in? It boggles my mind, Ivor, by everybody in the bloody free world can see that the Bucks can help. I know they drafted a guy in the third round. To the best of my knowledge, he's never even worn a practice jersey yet, much less taking a snap at a game. We know that Ronald Jones is at best inconsistent. Freeman's a veteran. Freeman has proven he could do it. Maybe he's over the hill. He's not 30 yet. He, to the best of my knowledge, he's proven he can catch the ball. Why, oh, why won't they bring this guy in?
You know, Steve, it's hard for me to argue with anything that the Kemper just said, and I'd love to argue with Lee. You know that. My second nature. Steve, there might be some kind of a general consensus, that Freeman's done. He's over the hill. His best days are behind him. But having said that, as a situational back, and Lee's not talking about giving the guy the ball 18 times a game to run between the tackles. I'm not talking about that.
Exactly.
He's talking about a veteran who knows how to run that screen, and Matt Ryan was good at it in Atlanta. And maybe money's a factor, but Steve, Seattle's got a first-class running back in Chris Carson, and they're still interested in checking the tires on Freeman. He wouldn't look bad in a Buck uniform if the price is right, Steve, as a situational guy. All your chips are in. I want my chip on a veteran who's done it and who might still be able to do it. You try him out and you see if he's got anything left.
Ira, they drafted Raymond Calais in the seventh round. The guy's the next David Johnson. What are you talking about?
You know what you can do with your human joystick over there, Isbeth? You know what you can do with it?
You can't say those kind of things. You can't say those things on your podcast, Ira. The FCC won't let you.
If Howard Stern can interview Brady for 3 hours, I can say that to Isbeth. But, Steve, let's start the war chant right now. We want Freeman. We, and I don't mean Josh Freeman. We want Freeman. We want Freeman. That's the way we should go out on this podcast, Stevie.
First, I don't think it's a they. I think it's just Bruce Arians. He doesn't want that. And at this point, they can't see if the guy's healthy. So I'll at least give him that. But Freeman played all last season. He didn't have any off-season surgery. So I don't know. It's frustrating. Excuse me. The guy I have my eye on, Ira, as crazy as it sounds. You brought up the Redskins earlier. They're in a rebuilding mode. They've drafted a running back. They've got a lot of running backs. They got Peyton Barber. I mean, the way the Bucks have built this team, now feels like the time for Adrian Peterson to walk through the door. It really does.
Wow.
Coming off 2,000-yard seasons, he played for Arians. Remember a few years ago, allegedly, he wanted to play in Florida or a couple other teams. And when he was listing, there are a few teams I'd play for. And that seems like a unique fit. Now, I know he doesn't really catch the ball, but man, it just feels like that's the energy that Bruce Arians is looking for.
Well, he's a freakish football player. His place in Canton, I believe, is assured. Lee, I think you'd agree with that.
Oh, of course.
Certainly. I'll say this. He's going to want the football. He is not Devontae Freeman in terms of you explained that you're going to be a situational back. And, Lee, whether you agree or not, that's not the point. Whether you agree or not, there's a firm belief at One Buck Place that Ronald Jones will be a 1,000-yard runner, if not more, this season. And to be fair, and he finished with a hell of a game against Atlanta. He might have been the best player on the field that day, besides Breshad Perryman. He had a wonderful game. I think he went over 100 yards and had 11 carries, if I'm correct, in that game. And there's a firm belief, Steve, that Ronald Jones made tremendous strides as a runner, and he certainly did in terms of his average, from 1.9 to 4.2, Steve, is strong proof that this kid, you know, is dedicated. And maybe that rookie year is an aberration. He hasn't done it yet, but they believe in Ronald Jones as a full-time running back. They're going to go with him heavy this fall.
I have a real quick here. This just moved on Twitter. NFL.com reports that Seattle was dangling a one-year offer to Freeman for $4 million. And the other two teams that are interested in him, the Jets, oh, well, home hum, and the Eagles, who, just like Seahawks, they know what they're doing. I just don't understand why the Bucs are so hard-headed about getting a running back. I just don't understand it. I don't get it.
Along came Jones, Steve. Along came Jones.